Hello, everyone. It's Steve Baker. It's time for another 5 and 10. But before I get started today, I just wanted to take a moment and thank Locals for sending me a box of wonderful swag. The Locals and Rumble merger is now becoming a powerful 1-2 punch for free speech, and I'm thankful to be on both platforms. As a matter of fact, I've been informed by Locals that my articles on Locals have become a top 5 most trafficked feature on the platform. So I'm honored that that is taking place. So please consider joining my Locals community, and by all means, please consider subscribing to my Rumble channel and like this video when you see it there. Okay, here we go. Number one, remember when just a short time ago we were convinced that terrorism, particularly Islamic terrorism, was our country's biggest threat? Well, before that, it was the Soviet Union. And you remember those oaths taken by everyone from the president all the way down to local law enforcement officers to protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We now seem to have a host of those domestic threats. They begin with cultural Marxism, maybe artificial intelligence, poisoned food supply, medical tyranny, which we just have recently experienced. We've got ESG scores, educational indoctrination of our children, and then, of course, the list goes on and on. But I've been repeating a warning over and over these past few months that the biggest threat we now face is against our speech and language. Speech is clearly and irrefutable been under attack by big tech, the mainstream media, and the federal government. We are seeing people being jailed in the United Kingdom and Canada for unapproved speech. I've warned that the biggest lesson being ignored in January 6 prosecution is the more severe sentencing given to those who said things while they were inside the Capitol building or those who used scary words on social media. Despite our recent Supreme Court rulings from this more traditionalist majority that we have now, which continues to issue rulings in favor of the First Amendment, speech is still under constant assault. A couple of weeks ago, there was a bill passed by the Democrat-led Michigan State House that would make it a hate crime to cause someone, and I quote, to feel terrorized, frightened, or threatened with words, including by deliberately misgendering them. So, if you feel threatened, not actually under threat, this bill would essentially allow that person who feels threatened to file charges. Under the bill, offenders would be guilty of a felony punishable by imprisonment for not more than 5 years or by a fine of not more than $10,000. What happens now when we have to navigate 97 different genders and people's demands of hundreds or even thousands of different personal pronouns to be learned and remembered? And what if I simply refuse to call a single person their plural preference of they, them, when they're quite evidently one person? Is my refusal then a threat against that individual? And what happens when it's a case of their word against mine and I have to face a court in a democratically controlled state or county? You've heard of the Orwellian concept of control the language and you control the masses. That's where we now find ourselves. And any public official who cannot stand unequivocally upon their oath to defend us against the most ominous domestic threat we're now facing must be removed from whatever office or station that they hold. Number two, on much the same topic, journalist Michael Schellenberger posted an essay today on Twitter dealing with government censorship designed to protect vulnerable communities. In this, he recounts some emerging horrors. He says, that lesson appears to be wholly lost on today's advocates of government censorship to, ostensibly at least, protect vulnerable communities and fight climate disinformation. In Ireland, Justice Minister Helen McEntee is urging the passage of legislation that would allow the police to enter people's homes without a warrant and to search phones and computers for hate speech. In Britain, MP Damian Collins wants to break the encryption so he can read private text messaging companies in the name of protecting children. In every English language country, there is an aggressive and successful effort by governments, think tanks, and news media companies to force social media platforms to censor critics of environmental alarmism. And yet, it's obvious that such censorship has nothing whatsoever to do with protecting vulnerable communities and everything to do with framing populist political voices as racist, homophobic, and climate-denying witches. This isn't anything new. In 2016, Bill Nye, the science guy, you know him, he said, and I quote, "As a taxpayer and voter, the introduction of the extreme doubt about climate change is affecting my quality of life as a public citizen, so I can see where people are very concerned about this and they're pursuing criminal investigations as well as engaging in discussions like this. That there is a chilling effect on scientists who are in extreme doubt about climate change, I think that is good." In other words, pursuing criminal investigations against climate change deniers, even scientists, is a good thing in his mind. In 2015, John F. Kennedy Jr., he said that there should be criminal charges for global warming deniers, including saying that it was treason and that such people should be, and this is a quote, "enjoying three hots and a cot at The Hague with all the other war criminals." More recently, JFK Jr. has endorsed AOC's Green New Deal, and just this year, 2023, he has continued his opposition to nuclear energy. Just remember that, please, when you get seduced by his anti-COVID vaccine rhetoric and other populist ideals. He is not the moderate, reasonable, rational alternative candidate to either Trump or Gavin Newsom when it comes to liberty-loving people and what we are looking for. Number three, a recent Associated Press story reports that Americans are now migrating and segregating themselves by their politics at a rapid pace, fueling the greatest divide between the states in modern history. Conservatives are moving to red states and liberals are moving to blue states in increasing numbers. They say one party controls the entire legislature in all but two states. In 28 states, the party in control has a supermajority and at least one legislative chamber, which means the majority party has so many lawmakers that they can override a governor's veto. Not that that would be necessary in most cases, as only 10 states have governors of different parties than the one that controls the legislature. Well, it's abortion, crime, taxes, gun laws, gender issues, and how states handled the COVID lockdowns that seem to be the biggest drivers of this shift in polarization amongst Americans. Frankly, this is the federalism concept that our founders had in mind, and I am a big fan of this new movement. I'm an even bigger fan of those states' governors, attorneys general, and sheriffs who are pushing back against federal overreach and telling Washington's swarms of officers sent to their states to harass their people and eat out their substance to back off or stay away. And frankly, I never dreamed I'd reach this point personally, in which I'd actually welcome a coalition of states that ultimately reach the political power and will to tell DC to largely just leave us alone. Secession? Maybe? Yeah, I'm open to the idea. I don't know that there's another way to stop the downhill slide that we're currently on. Number four, in the first 5 days of July, 10 people have been fatally shot in our nation's capital. Never mind the oppressive gun laws in D.C. that prevent people from protecting themselves, because you know, they'll just say that those illegal guns are coming from surrounding counties. Of course, you then have to dismiss the fact that those kinds of death by gun numbers are not happening in those neighboring Virginia cities. The truth is, until Democrats admit that 90% of all gun-related deaths are being caused by Democrat voters or their children against other Democratic voters and their children, this problem cannot be fixed, whether that be in D.C., Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, or New Orleans. Now, that's an inconvenient truth that no one is willing to honestly address when it comes to these so-called common sense gun control ideas. Without Democrats killing Democrats, we are one of the safest countries in the world in terms of gun-related deaths per capita. Number five, Tucker Carlson just gave his first interview since leaving Fox. Interestingly, he did so on Russell Brand's podcast, and it's a blockbuster, by the way. You need to check it out. Tucker reveals that in an interview with former Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund, that Sund told him that the crowd on January 6 was filled with federal agents. He planned, Tucker did, on airing that interview on his Fox show, but was canceled before he could do so. Tucker also discussed the possibility of a stolen election in 2020. And before I tell you what he said, I want to remind everyone that I never wrote a word or even insinuated anything remotely about an election being rigged or stolen in 2020, not until 22 months after. My own eureka moment came from Mark Zuckerberg's admission on Joe Rogan's podcast that he had taken direction from the FBI in suppressing information on the contents of Hunter Biden's laptop. Ultimately, despite whatever happened in terms of voter fraud or not, had there not been a concerted disinformation and information suppression campaign coordinated between big tech and the mainstream media, Trump would have still won that election. And maybe even I have learned a few new things in the last 2.5 years. But back to Tucker. In that interview with Russell Brand, he stated, and I quote, "Democracy is a faith-based system. There was no effort at all to convince people that electronic voting machines are secure, which they are not. That's a lie. Any country that has electronic voting machines is by definition at risk of having its elections stolen." I will also add to Tucker's comments that in my own research, I've found that virtually no European country allows mail-in ballots. I wonder why. Because, in combination, electronic voting and mail-in ballots is a known mechanism for facilitating massive, result-changing voter fraud. Now, I'm not going to go any deeper into that for now, but hypothetically speaking, instead of it being the voting machines, which would require the manipulation of thousands of those machines and make it far more difficult to massage the totals and far easier to identify the mass fraud in that number of machines, but what if it was not the voting machines in every polling place, but it was the tabulators? Then one seeking to commit such voter fraud would need to access only 5, 6, or 7 tabulating machines, like just one from each of the contested counties, where a radical surge in votes for a Democrat candidate might be more easily justified or accepted. And, hypothetically speaking, what if there was a whistleblower who might be willing to come forward if he was assured of absolute protection for himself and his family in so doing? Or, in lieu of that, hypothetically speaking, what if there was an existing document that explains in detail the design, implementation, and testing of that process in certain overseas elections beginning back about roughly a decade ago, a system designed by our State Department and the CIA. You know, hypothetically speaking, read into that what you will for now. All right, that's it for today. Please consider joining my Locals community where I share content I don't put out anywhere else. It's free to subscribe for as little as $5 per month. You can get even more content than I share anywhere else. And you can also then obviously support my continued investigations into government weaponization against the American people and my ongoing investigations into what really happened on January 6th. Simply go to TPC4USA.com. That's TPC, the number 4USA.com. Or from your app store, download the Locals app and then search for at TPC4USA. You can also find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Truth Social with the same handle, at TPC4USA. I'm trying to keep it simple for everyone. Thanks a bunch, and I will see you again on Monday with another 5 and 10.